My message to Celtic supporters everywhere tonight is simply this. The game is over. The Rebels have won.
Hello and thanks once again for taking the time to download and listen to our podcast from CelticUnderground.net. I'm Harry Brady and I'm recording this on the anniversary of the day that Fergus McCann saved Celtic.
Sure, it's a grand old team to play for. Sure, it's a grand old team, be dead.
Now, I'm well aware that there was more than Fergus behind the saving of Celtic. Many listening to this will have attended many the meetings that that I attended that were created by the guys behind Celts for Change, and the work that they did galvanised the support to take us forward. But unlike other clubs, we didn't just sit there waiting for some white knight to ride into town. It was the fans who created the environment which allowed the likes of John Keane and Fergus McCann and Brian Dempsey to get into position of finally saving our club from the ignominy of administration and worse things that could have happened. Also, it's interesting to know, if you are probably 30 or younger, you might find it hard looking back to understand how a man who saved the club would have not had a hero's welcome every second of every day amongst the Celtic support. But you have to understand the environment of the time. Over on the other side of the city, there was a charismatic businessman who actually many of us started to realise, but it's now common knowledge, he's not a businessman at all. He's a failed businessman and close to being a crook. How he's got a knighthood is beyond me. The £1 billion with which the Murray Empire went bust is a phenomenal story of greed and avarice and failures of the banking system that is yet to be wholly uncovered. The fact that there's still a massive black hole in the pension fund of the poor Murray Group workers, whilst that charlatan is allowed to buy cheap assets of the bank is again something that needs investigation. Never mind the stealing from the taxpayer that club did. But it was an environment of you can spend whatever you want, and Fergus didn't, because Fergus had a brain and was a good businessman, and that's why we are in the healthy position we are today with our history intact. But thanks to Hull Boy, I've got some quotes that are from the time and from Fergus, which give you an insight into the man. I'm just a footnote in the grand scheme of things. Brother Walfred was the visionary who started things, and is the name that should stay in people's minds. Being a Celtic supporter is not always easy, but it's always worthwhile. That charity fund inside and outside Scotland is a very important identity of Celtic Football Club. The club was formed for charitable purposes. It is very important to remember that. Celtic is a community institution the supporters are entitled to be proud of, and Celtic will go on forever. So coming up in this podcast, we have the story of Fergus and the Rebels. And then we have an interview with Megan Fallon from the Celtic FC Foundation, giving a bit more insight into what she does. And it'll be a series of interviews with people from the foundation, letting you know what they do, but also what the foundation does to make a real difference in people's lives. So this is me, Harry Brady, with a tale from the Celtic Wiki, and Megan Fallon saying goodnight and God bless.
Rebels have won. Another slice of Celtic history on the Celtic Wiki. March the 4th, 1994 will go down as one of the most significant dates in Celtic history. That was the day when the battle to save Celtic was finally won. After a long and arduous fight, it was Fergus McCann and his millions which would steal the headlines. The exiled local boy made good, heroically leading the cavalry over the hill to save the day. But while McCann certainly deserves his share of the plaudits, The momentum for change did not come from the world of finance or big business. It came from the terraces. Bill McCann and men like Brian Dempsey and David Lowe were the public faces of a Parkhead coup. It was the ordinary supporters who had opened the door for their takeover. What these fans lacked in finances, they made up for in passion and a love of the club. Their rallies, their demonstrations, and even their boycotts would be every bit as important in the fight for Celtic as the millions of McCann. That fateful day brought to an end a near century of control of the club by two families. By the early 1990s, concerns about the Kelly and White dynasty, which had controlled the club for so long, had been growing. Since the failure to invest in their 1988 double winning side and the Mo Johnston signing fiasco, the support were becoming increasingly worried about the board's ability to compete with the big spending Rangers. The lack of investment was obvious on and off the pitch, and there existed a real fear the current custodians were incapable of adapting to the modern football environment. An historical policy of prudence had meant that the boys had failed to fully capitalise on the glory days of the Steen era. Now the club were being left behind by the aggressively ambitious Rangers. On the pitch, commercially, and in terms of stadium facilities, Celtic were an embarrassingly distant second to their city rivals. In May 1990, the club had brought onto the board Michael Kelly from a dynastic Celtic family and an outsider in Brian Dempsey. Kelly, a politician turned PR guru, and the successful property developer Dempsey were hailed by supporters as bringing much needed marketing and financial expertise to the board. With the post-Hillsborough Taylor report sounding the death knell for Celtic Park and its vast terraces, Dempsey, a Lanarkshire-born Celtic fanatic, was hoping to convince the board that the club should move to a purpose-built stadium in Rodbroyston. However, relations between Dempsey and Michael Kelly deteriorated. With various board members suspicious of Dempsey's intentions surrounding Rodbroyston, Kelly and fellow director Chris White made their play to have a property developer removed from the Parkhead inner circle. They were successful, and just 5 months after his appointment, Dempsey was ousted. Little did they know at the time, but the board had just drawn first blood in the civil war for the future of Celtic. As the team stumbled from one drearily woeful season to another, the frustration of support turned increasingly to anger. The years of mismanagement had left many fans at breaking point, and with the very future of the club at stake, the decision was made to take on the board and end generations of Kelly and White rule. It was not an easy decision for those supporters to make. They were only too aware of the club's traditions and the fact that the Whites and Kellys had links dating back to the very first Celtic side. Indeed, these two families have played a significant part in establishing Celtic as a truly great name in football. But there was little point in having a proud history if you had no future. Save Ourselves were the first supporters group to attempt to take on the board, and they were followed by the Independent Celtic Supporters Association. But it wasn't until the later emergence in 1993 of Celts for Change that fan power really began to change the course of Celtic history. Celts for Change employed a policy of direct action to highlight the club's plight. Their numbers quickly swelled, and demonstrations included a picket outside Celtic's Ben Bankers, the Bank of Scotland. Boycotts of a league clash with Kilmarnock at Parkhead on March 1, 1994, resulted in a pathetic attendance of around 8,300, while the board insisted the crowd was in the region of 10,800. This grassroots campaign for change was supported by leafleting in a thriving fanzine scene, but there did remain a small section of the support who were loyal to the board and who were initially dismayed at the tactics employed by Celts for Change and others. The board had tried to play on this by deviously claiming Celts for Change and other supporter-led protests were little more than a vehicle for a bitter Brian Dempsey. There was no doubt that Dempsey along with David Lowe, were too pressing for change at Celtic Park. But their takeover campaign, despite its shared aims, was born and run independently from that of Celts for Change. An increasingly divided board had clung desperately onto power, and the appointment of Terry Cassidy and David Smith, the club's first non-Catholic director, was seen as an attempt to add much-needed business acumen to their ranks. But with the very future of Celtic Park in doubt, time was quickly running out, and the hugely unpopular and abrasive Cassidy did little to enhance the board's reputation. Ambitious plans to relocate to a purpose-built Celtic village in Cambus Lang was the board's solution to the stadium issue. But doubts about the viability of the scheme, which was similar to Dempsey's Rob Royston project, had long been aired. In the meantime, a number of potential buyers for the club had emerged, the most credible of these being Fergus McCann. McCoy-born, Canadian-based businessman had made his millions through selling golf holidays to the North American market. He had the backing of Dempsey and proposed to rebuild Celtic Park by selling shares in the club to the support. A Celtic fan since childhood, McCann had originally approached the board in 1988 with an offer to provide the club with a low-interest loan to build a new two-tier executive stand in which he hoped to sell hospitality packages. His approach had been quickly dismissed. With the pressure mounting from all angles, the board announced a press conference for what they claimed would be the most momentous announcement in Celtic history. This announcement was no more than another unveiling for the Cambus Lang plans, with the board now claiming a Swiss bank was willing to finance the deal. However, a little digging from interested parties soon found that the supposed funding was non-existent. On March the 3rd, with the reputation of the board at an all-time low and the club facing crippling debts, the Bank of Scotland summoned club officials and told them unless a guarantee of £1 million was found within 24 hours, then they would begin the process of winding up the club affairs. Finally, the board had no place to run and nowhere to hide. So it was that just before midday on March the 4th, 1994, Fergus McCann became recognised as the saviour of Celtic. As Brian Dempsey would famously declare, "The rebels have won." But while it was the men in suits who took the plaudits and provided the sound bites for this Celtic revolution, the real heroes were not just those with money, but rather those with passion. The real heroes were those supporters on the terraces who began the coup to save the club they loved. They would not make millions from the battle to save Celtic, but they would earn the eternal gratification of a generation of hoop supporters.
So I'm with a guest from the Celtic FC Foundation, but do you want to introduce yourself?
Sure, I'm Megan Fallon and I'm Sales and Engagement Manager at the Foundation, joined about 8 months ago now, last summer, and absolutely loving it so far.
Well, that's excellent, but you may work for Celtic or through the Celtic Foundation, but you still have to sell your Celtic credentials. So what was your first Celtic game? Who was your first Celtic hero?
My first game, I was 9 years old. I had been begging to go to one for a couple of years by that point, and we played Hearts. It was 2-2, and Di Canio got himself sent off, so he was my hero, but he didn't do it too well that day. Cadet would be the one. I wanted my hair permed for years, and
20 years thankfully too late.
Thankfully it didn't happen. Then I wanted my hair dreadlocked as well. Thankfully it didn't happen, but no, he was my very first.
Do you remember
hero.
Much about that game?
I remember being in the temporary stand, and he got sent off just in front of us.
What was it for? Wearing a Celtic strip?
No, it was just petulance at the...
Di Canio petulance?
I can't remember exactly. You maybe remember the match. But it was something to do with taking a penalty and then his celebration or his it's I can't remember.
Right.
I think he something to do with chucking the ball away.
If anybody listening to this remembers, they can email in podcast@celticunderground.net. Are you on Twitter?
Yes, I am. Don't use it very often. I'm more into the Instagram myself, but I am on Twitter.
I was going to say people could tweet you the answer, but they can tweet me at Harry Brady CU if they can remember much about the game.
At Megan L. Fallon.
Okay, so more importantly, it's on to what you do at the Celtic FC Foundation. So you joined 8 months ago. What was your remit when you joined?
So my remit, it says sales and engagement, which is a bit of a confusing title. I guess it's more raising the profile of the foundation, maybe a sort of marketing sense for the charity, trying to work very closely with all the important groups who mean a lot to the club and mean a lot to the foundation. So that's everything from our supporters clubs to our individual supporters. Of course, I've launched a membership scheme called Wilfred's Wish, which people might have seen some of the videos of. So supporters clubs, individual supporters, businesses who are very close to the club, maybe do a lot with their matchday hospitality and maybe want to link in with the foundation as well. And then individual supporters who might want to get very involved with the foundation in terms of helping out with our projects, coming along, maybe giving in-kind support, that type of thing. So just engagement on a really broad level with all our stakeholders.
So did you know much about the foundation before you joined?
I did. So I'd been going along to the events for quite a number of years. My husband went to Kenya with Jane and the team a couple of years ago, and we've been going to the dinners for many years. So we knew quite a lot about the projects and the beneficiaries, but nowhere near as much as I've learned. I've been completely blown away. Like, I probably, like most people, knew that the foundation, the supporters are incredible at what they raise, and then that money would go back out to a specific partner, maybe a hospice or, you know, whoever we decided to partner with for that event. But now more and more we're concentrating on just our own work. So we've got about 25 staff, which is incredible, really, really surprised me. And those staff run about 30 of their own community projects. So that's Celtic designed and delivered projects. And it's projects in all the areas that are particularly in need. So the most sort of low income and deprived communities throughout Glasgow, specifically the East End, the north of the city, similar communities across Scotland, a couple in Ireland. And we do a lot of work in London now, in a very similar community in Tower Hamlets, where things are quite tough for people growing up there. We've got a project called Breaking Barriers, which concentrates on helping kids with sort of integration, breaking down gang culture and gang warfare and so on. And the foundation have got a full-time member of staff down there as well, which is quite a surprise to me. So yeah, the projects are very, very in keeping with the club's roots. They are across the areas of health, equality, learning and poverty, and it's really just about kind of trying to improve social conditions in those types of communities and trying to open doors for people that might not have had those opportunities. So we've got everything from got a partnership with Glasgow North East Food Bank, which we've done a wee video on recently, and we fund the position.
That's one with Craig Gordon.
Yeah, it's one with Craig. He went along, he was incredible actually. He went along, spent a lot of time with Tara. So we fund Tara's position there, and she's a full-time coordinator who works for Glasgow North East Food Bank but runs 6 sites across the city. Unfortunately, there's been the need to open more and more of them since she joined. So she coordinates all of that, and she's turned it from not being just a food bank service, but she now has an advice service. She has different groups in to speak, maybe about money advice, Samaritans and so on, and she has a cafe there as well for people to go along to, so it's a real community hub at each of those. We have a project which works with people suffering from addiction and mental health issues, and the next step to that, again, I'm not sure if many people are aware that we have a full college operating in the stadium.
No, I don't. And that's one of the things that is obviously coming out here. I think lots of people think, the foundation, we give money to the foundation and then they give big checks, because that's the only time that the foundation get in the newspapers, is handing over a check to something.
Yeah.
So the college?
I think we do a little bit of that when there's a cause that we particularly want to link up with. Like last year we did so much for the refugee crisis, and out in, you know, we sent an ambulance to the Greek islands and so on. So there is a lot of still partnering with other charities at times, and particularly for the Christmas appeal, as everyone will probably be aware. But the majority is our own projects, and the college, it's called Celtic Learning Centre, and it's in the Lisbon Lions stand, just close by the family stand. And most days of the week we will have a group of around 15-20 young people who will be referred to us from different areas, maybe, you know, a social worker or different agencies, because they're kind of long-term unemployed, they've maybe been a young offender, just dropped out of school, and they just really need that wee bit of engagement to bring them back into whether it's training or the workplace. So they'll come along and they will start a sort of 10 or 12 week course in our learning centre, where our employability people and careers advisors will talk to them about everything from interview skills to CV writing to having, we would not normally have quite a, maybe, you know, 5-10 different work tasters for them, different industries coming in and introducing them to workplaces and different careers and motivational talks that they wouldn't normally maybe have been opened up to. And we always have a couple of maybe ex-players who come along, and because you can imagine the Celtic name's a real hook. You know, it's maybe kids that wouldn't really engage with the job centre or other places, but because there's a chance to come to Celtic Park, it does really engage them. And then they've maybe got someone like a Bertie Auld sitting talking to them and coaching them, and he's incredible. He'll come along on the first week, really, really get to know them, ask loads of questions, speak very, very positively to them, tell them about when he was young and he had to give up going out with his pals and, you know, everything he had to sacrifice to have his career. Then he'll come back a few weeks later, track their progress, really gets to know them, and then he'll come back at the end and he'll present them with their certificate, and he'll like spend a lot of time with them planning on where they want to go next and moving them into jobs and so on. So but it's not just that sort of 10-week course. Our coaches are brilliant. They really like spend time with people. People will come back, you know, weeks and months later to let us know how they're getting on, what job they've moved into, what training they've moved into. So we stick with them. You know, it's a long journey making sure people are on the right path. We've actually taken a lot of them on ourselves. We've Celtic have employed a lot of participants who've graduated from these programmes, and are maybe now, you might have seen the video of Paddy.
Yes.
Being interviewed by Brendan. So Paddy's now a full-time coach for us, which is just brilliant. We've got Joe, who's one of our community coaches. Joe came through our Ability Counts program. No, he came through our employability program.
Right.
He had real bad luck at the job centre and so on. He has scoliosis of the spine, I believe. He was born with no arms, and he was just given no opportunities, and he came on our course, and then he's now a coach for our Ability Counts program, where the kids just always say, do you know, he really gets them, because he's faced those difficulties, and he's now a football coach, and they look at him and they think, well, if he can do it, we can as well.
Yep.
So and I don't know if you've seen the story of Alex, who is our he was at the showcase event, and he is the young guy who's been coming to Ability Counts Down Syndrome Project since he was maybe 11 or 12. I think he's now 18, and he is a tour guide at Celtic Park now, which is just incredible. And he has been given the sort of helping out on the tours for months now, and he also presented to the board at Celtic and quite a number of people about his role. So some great stories. Really encourage anybody to MD who would like to just get in touch with us to hear more about some of the stories.
And one of the other areas that you mentioned there about Down syndrome and autism.
Yeah.
There's a lot of work with autistic kids.
So Ability Counts started, now a colleague would know this much better than me, but started maybe about quite a number of years ago now, and it was for children with Down syndrome, and I believe it was the first of its kind in Scotland, and it got huge praise and won a lot of awards for the way that our coaches designed the sessions and interacted with these children and really developed the skills. So as a branch of that, we then started a project for children with autism. And again, our coaches were obviously trained in that area, so there's some fantastic stories again from parents whose children have maybe not been able to get a good routine in place, who've really suffered from different sort of problems with socialising and communication because of autism, and the projects just really brought them on, giving them so many peers to go along and see every single week. Last night at the session we had Callum McGregor join us to play football with the kids and to interview some of the parents, and just seeing that, you know, the kids turn up there every Thursday, they know that they're going there, and they get to, they meet so many pals, and it's such a great experience for them.
I've been fortunate enough to be to two showcase events, and both times people, parents from the autism, or parents with kids with autism have spoken, and both times someone was chopping onions next to me when they were speaking. And if you've got a child and you at any point think you're having a hard life, then you need to listen to some of the stories that these parents are, I mean, talking about the one day a week when their child will open up and communicate was just
incredible. I think what really impressed me when I joined as well was that Celtic developed a strand called Autism at Home, which is, it's in partnership with Strathclyde Uni, and that is a course that parents can go on to learn about, in partnership with the lecturers at Strathclyde Uni who are experts in the field, to learn about coping with autism, so that as a group together they can get some respite and sort of study various coping mechanisms and how to work with the children as well. So that's a part of the project that's really important. And I think Ability Counts is actually now going to be opened up to adults, and so that's the next stage of the project, because there are some kids like Alex, who's now our tour guide, he's now 18, 19, and technically should really not be coming along, but of course we're not going to turn people away, so it's good that we've now got a further strand for adults, so that project can continue for as long as people
I can get across on the few occasions that I've been fortunate enough to engage with people who've benefited. They are life-changing.
Yeah.
What Celtic Foundation does, I know it's a cliche thing, but it is life-changing to people.
That's it.
And it's all done by the contributions of the Celtic supporters.
Yeah.
Which then gets back round to what your job is, to spread that.
Yep. It's we have so many exciting events, and obviously things like the Henrik and Lugo game is just so exciting. That's going to be the top of everyone's agenda. But when you hear some of these stories, and sometimes it's not just the overall story, sometimes it's the story of the individual, like Paddy, who's, you know, spent all of his young life in jail and never really had anyone give him any real support, and what he has overcome. You know, and guys like Joe, who were never given an opportunity in the workplace until they came along. It's when you hear those individuals that it really does hit home how big a difference it can make.
So that's 25 people now working at the foundation. I think this year, with the events in the next 3 or 4 months, where so many of the proceeds for these events are going to the foundation. So there's the Henrik Lubo game, the Abseil.
Yeah.
There's the dinner in London for the foundation, for celebrating the 50th anniversary of Lisbon. I don't think the date's been made public yet, but I think people know there's going to be the golf day.
Yeah.
What else am I missing out on?
We've got a group of, again, I don't know the exact number, but a group going off to Malawi with her head of events. Similar to last year, they're in partnership with Mary's Meals. They'll be going out to Malawi to, again, help the local community there, building resources, developing the community, a bit of teaching, a bit of football training with the children. So that'll be an incredible experience for the group that are going. I believe it's relatively a new group. I don't think many have been before. The Abseil will be really cool because it's now the North Stand rather than the main stand. So have you done the main stand before?
No, I've done neither. I've only done the zip slide.
You've done the zip slide. Well, I've done the main stand and it was terrifying. You have to just trust that rope's going to catch you. So I don't want to think about it.
Do you know what? I love these types of things. I did the zip slide. But, I mean, my wife was joking that I get sponsored to do the zip slide and she was saying that I would pay money to do that. So
But
see the difference of the zip slide to the Abseil is, see the zip slide, you sort of walk down the steps and the next thing you're
either
off.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas I've done the, what's it called, the Go Ape. And the biggest thing was stepping off for the final, there's Go Ape up at Aberfoyle. with the biggest thing was stepping off to do the big zip slide towards the end. Because unlike the zip slide at Celtic Park, where you walk down steps and eventually just the next step is too far for you to reach and you just go down the slide. In your brain, you were saying step off, but actually your feet didn't go.
That was what was the worst about the abseil, because you have to... So I was climbing over the top of the main stand, and then you have to let each hand go, and it's on the rope, but then you need to let each foot go, and it's your feet that are catching you. So it's when you finally let that final foot go, you're just gonna... You just need to hope for the best.
But you're filling people with hope for the best.
But what an experience, and what a view... You know, like abseiling down from the north stand when you're the only one in the whole stadium, like it will be stunning. So it'd be a really cool one. The other one probably is maybe the sleep out this year. I know it's still a wee bit off just now, but that's one that really I just really love because of what it's for. So last year we had in excess of 100 supporters sleeping trackside overnight to highlight the plight of homelessness at that time of year.
£70,000 or something was raised last year for sleeping.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, it was in that region. Yeah, it's part of the Christmas appeal. So, yeah, I think that's an amazing experience just to be able to do that. That's something that you would never obviously get the chance to do, is to spend the night under the stars at Celtic Park. So I think that that's a good one to mention. But yeah, the Legends game, the abseil, and then Malawi and the dinner in London will be quite incredible. And we also have 28 cycling to Lisbon from Glasgow. For leaving, I think, early May, I can't remember the date, and then arriving on the 25th and cycling into the Estadio Nacional. So,
and there might be other events coming up around the 25th of May.
There might be. You probably know more than me.
If you read The Sun, apparently...
No, of course there's going to be so many club events that week, and amazing club events, but the foundation one, our headliner, will be the Legends game, obviously, so it'll be something else to see Henrik back in paradise, and Lubo, of course.
But the other important thing is people don't need to go out of their way to do a foundation event to raise money for the foundation.
No, not at all. So we've recently launched a membership scheme which is called Walford's Wish, and that's where we appeal videos have been in support of that, the ones with the manager and Craig Gordon and so on. And there is another video coming in the next week or two, so look out for that, which will be around Ability Count. So that'll be around the project with our children with autism. So the membership scheme is, it costs £3 a month. You can, it's a really quick sign up by text. Text the word champion to 700-0. Shameless plug. And
That's all right. That's why you're on.
Or online sign up. But yeah, I mean, obviously, there's nice wee incentives. Everybody who signs up is entered into a draw to play at Lennox Town this summer. That's going to take place in June. We're going to have a challenge match for, you know, 30 odd of our champions to come along and have a kick about.
Can I just say, I played at Lennox Town.
Did you?
In May, and then couldn't walk for the next 2 days.
What happened?
I realised I was old. That's what
are you going for it, like thinking you were Dembele?
No, my brain did. My brain thought I was at Dembele, and my legs realised I was 46.
Oh no, it's a great setting though, isn't it? Although I'm glad we're doing it in June, because training had to be called off yesterday, because as soon as the weather hits, it's Lennox Town, it's not the easiest place to be. So draw to play at Lennox Town. Everybody who signs up, of course, gets sort of newsletters and really unique content about where the money's going, and also some unique events throughout the year, invitations to see how our participants are coming on and where the money's going. Because I think the monthly membership's really, really important, because that allows us to then have a sort of steady income month on month, which allows us to say, okay, Ability Counts can now go to a new location, or it can now, you know, be expanded, because we can sort of rely on that monthly income. So I think that's what's really fantastic about the membership scheme in terms of long-term planning for these projects.
Okay, so final plug. How easy is it for people to get in contact with the foundation to find out more about it?
Very, very easy. So we are on all social media. So send us a Facebook message, tweet us. We're just on Instagram, which if anyone likes Instagram, then I think our account is starting to pick up speed. It's, you know, some kind of unique photos around what we're up to, our projects and so on. Or email us at, I think... CFC Foundation at celticfc.co.uk.
That is correct.
There you go.
And with that, I'll say, Megan, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Bring me sunshine in your smile. Bring me laughter all the while. In this world where we live, there should be more happiness. So much joy you can give to each brand new bright tomorrow. Make me happy through the years. Never bring me any tears. Let your arms be as warm as the sun from up above. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love. Bring me sunshine in your smile. Bring me laughter all the while. In this world where we live, there should be more happiness. So much joy you can give to each brand new bright tomorrow. Make me happy through the years. Never bring me any tears. Let your arms be as warm as the sun from up above. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love, sweet love. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love.